Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
care.
I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. Episode 6 of our free agency offseason preview series. The AFC East officially in the rearview mirror. The NFC East, the task at hand today. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, one who we hope enjoyed the Easter holiday, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
Yeah, it was good. You know, a little Good Friday fish, nothing too crazy. Got to see other forms of human life in the family, and yeah, not too bad.
I'm a little disappointed you guys didn't partake in a widespread Zoom type affair like we did. I should have hit on last week when we talked about the AFCs for the 17 family members across the country we included in the Passover festivities. So I'm glad you were able to see a little bit of family interaction and do so. Hopefully you guys took proper precautions, but always good to hear things went off without a hitch. You ready to talk a little NFC East today, my friend?
I have to give someone in your family some props. I'm going to go with Aunt Phyllis. Fantastic ceilings in her home. Is it your aunt?
It is my aunt. I don't think she listens to this podcast. Okay. I'm pretty sure she's never tuned into a single edition. Her husband, my uncle Gil, might. That remains up for debate on all that. But I will definitely relay that you approve of her taste in designs for what she did with her vaulted ceilings. As she was kind of the matriarch behind organizing our Zoom Seder last week and getting all Furman's, Kozlowski's, Lerner's, and everybody else on board to celebrate this fine spring holiday.
That sounds like a powerful attorney's office there.
So, well, I mean, you know what I'm trying to think. There are a couple attorneys in the family, a couple of doctors. We'll save you the stereotypes that I know you're going to get after one way or another.
Whatsoever.
I don't think we have any bankers, though, now that I think about it.
Ah.
So, a little bit disappointing in that regard. But all right. NFC East, and like we've done for all the previous five divisions, we'll kind of repeat the same format, go from worst to first as far as the odds are concerned at FoxBet. And when you look at the way the East projects on paper, the Washington Redskins, a long shot to win the division, priced at 11-1. The team right above them in the pecking order, the New York Football Giants at 9-1, and a tandem of teams that I think will have eyes on the prize for 2020, the Philadelphia Eagles at +115, and the Dallas Cowboys amid a shuffling defense and changing offensive line structure, listed at +110. So, Payne, if we start with the Redskins, I guess their biggest offseason addition comes in the form of Ron Rivera, who went out there and brought in a familiar face, trading a fifth-round pick for Kyle Allen. Some interesting comments last week that said, hey, if the pandemic protocol tends to get in the way for implementation of a new system, Kyle Allen could have the inside track on being their day one starter. Do we think that's more to fire up Dwayne Haskins than anything else? Or do you think when there's smoke, there's fire as it pertains to a new coach and his level of familiarity with his pivot under center?
I think, listen, he might have the upper hand in knowing the system a little bit better. I don't know if ownership's going to approve of that move.
He definitely won't have the upper hand in pocket presence given what we saw over the last 6-7 games as a member of the Panthers. Let's put it that way.
I think we kind of know what Kyle Allen is. He's a guy who's going to come in there, knows the system well. He's young enough. He's not probably overly threatening, but he is going to at least push the man in front of him, and I think he's there to maybe help a little bit to get him up to speed with this new offense. You know, the problem was if you bring in Cam, he's going to have to be your starter, and he's way too threatening to that situation. So I think Kyle Allen makes a lot of sense there. It's not a signing that's overly large in the grand scheme of things for the Redskins, I don't believe.
When you look at some of their other offseason additions, not a team that went out there and did a whole lot in the way of flash and dash. They bolstered their secondary a bit with Kendall Fuller. They bring him back. You bring in Ronald Darby. You add what feels like another running back, so I think they'll have 72 on their roster, bringing in Peyton Barber and J.D. McKissic. Familiar face for Ron Rivera, brings Thomas Davis back. But honestly, Payne, I mean, Terry McLaurin going to have faced triple coverage every time he goes out to run routes, because I'm not sure there's anybody else in this Redskins roster that can catch a pass.
And you're like, not as high on McLaurin as I am.
You know what?
I've seen some public Furman showings where he's kind of like, McLaurin can't be a number one.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure you want to go in with McLaurin being your bona fide number one. If he becomes your default number one, so be it. But I don't care how good a guy is, you do need some help on the other side of the ball. And even Redskins fans, I'm sure, couldn't name some of their secondary or tertiary receiving options going into the season as things stand today.
So I really like Terry McLaurin. However, I want to phrase this and pitch this as the Redskins are certainly trying to get help. And that help...
They did make a play for Amari.
It was more than the play. It was close. So, you know, I don't want to crush them for not bringing in anybody, because they were close. And I think they kicked the tires on Austin Hooper as well. And all of a sudden they saw the price tag and they're like, oh, not sure we're going there. But, you know, they do need some help on the offensive side of the ball. They realize that this is not a one-year fix. This is not a one-year rebuild. This is going to take some time. Ron Rivera was hired to bring in a certain type of culture, and I think that's what he's going to try to instill in year one. Certainly, you know, you want to help your young quarterback and bring in some weapons, and they're going to do that, I think. You know, you're probably going to add a veteran guy in free agency post-draft. You're probably going to focus on picking up some help there in the draft with young options. But I think defensively, you mentioned some guys, whether it was Kendall Fuller or Ronald Darby or Thomas Davis. You know, listen, I like Kendall Fuller a lot. We raved about him, I think, a few seasons ago, and how the Chiefs basically robbed the Redskins in that Alex Smith trade when Kendall Fuller was basically just a throw-in. He was more than a throw-in. I think he was like the best slot corner that season in the entire league. So, you know, to me, he's a versatile guy. He played in the slot a little bit last year with the Chiefs, but transitioned to safety about two-thirds of the way through the year. So he is very flexible there. I think the Redskins absolutely need some corner help. And that became an issue by what I feel like was probably the brain fart of the offseason in trading away Quentin Dunbar for a fifth-round pick.
For nothing. For nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this Dunbar's a top 10 corner the last few seasons. So to only get a day three pick from a premium player at a premium position is mind-boggling. Aside from that, like, I don't mind the Redskins offseason. Ronald Darby is interesting. It's a one-year prove-it type deal. I think he's probably a starter based on his experience playing outside. There's really not a lot of guys on this roster that have proven they can play outside corner. And, you know, listen, he's going to have a big year. I'm an FSU guy, but I'm not going to sugarcoat it here. Your hope is that Ronald Darby can kind of return to form now that he's healthier and he's on this prove-it type deal. Because, you know, if you look at his production last year, Darby was the cornerback that allowed the most yards per route run on the entire Eagles team. It was over 2 yards. So, you know, I don't think the Redskins are done at this position. They're going to be, again, doing some bargain shopping in free agency. They're going to probably be drafting a player or two. But either way, if you look at the Redskins, you know, not very good in the secondary. One of the 10 easiest schedules faced of pass offenses, bottom third in the league in defensive pass efficiency, and explosive pass rate allowed. So that position needs some help. You mentioned Thomas Davis. You know, he's got ties to Ron Rivera. I think he's there to be more of a locker room culture guy than like this, you know, 800 snap contributor. He had a horrible season with the Chargers last year. My feeling is Thomas Davis is both insurance and help for Reuben Foster. If Reuben Foster's knee isn't fully recovered early on, then Davis can take reps as a veteran before he wears down. But I think, you know, when you're looking at Reuben Foster, extremely talented. He just needs some guidance in both the locker room and in life. And I think Thomas Davis probably fills that role as well for him.
Well, you have to imagine the Redskins, if they have the chance to grab Chase Young, it'll help if they can bring pressure on opposing quarterbacks, knowing how questionable their defensive backfield appears to be on paper as it stands right now. But before we move on from the Redskins, Payne, I have to ask you about the offensive lineman, which has remained the biggest question for the Redskins. When is this Trent Williams situation going to find a way to resolve itself? And what can the Redskins realistically expect if they're going to use him as a trade chip, whether it's for draft capital or for other proven assets?
I would think soon. You know, we've said this, I think, through the last, you know, couple podcasts, whether specifically or have kind of hinted at like the general ideas of how these teams operate. But, you know, we're getting close enough to the draft where teams can want to see if they can resolve the remaining deficiencies and holes through the draft. If they can't, that's when like the remaining veterans start to get picked up. Trent Williams and his agent have been like trying to seek a trade for over a year. And I think they demanded that gets ratcheted up a few months ago. But around that time, there were like multiple teams interested in Trent Williams' services. So, you know, you had Cleveland, you had even Seattle. And one of the very first teams that made a call were the Jets and Joe Douglas. And from what I was told, the asking price was like astronomical. Like Washington was demanding a first round pick. And that's where some of this is getting ugly behind the scenes, because Trent's representation doesn't believe Washington's really acting in good faith. Now I'm hearing that like Washington is willing to take a second rounder and maybe something else. You know, Washington doesn't have a second round pick in this draft. So let's see. I believe they used that right last year on like moving up for Montez Sweat. Could it be? I think something like that. So they don't have a second round pick. Let's see what comes of this. But, you know, if you're looking at Washington and or you know, what they could potentially do in this draft, it'll be interesting to see how they decide to move on from him. You know, it also, I think, is going to come down to what the Jets and Cleveland do at 10 and 11. If they addressed offensive line there, not good for Trent Williams. If neither of those guys or one of those guys don't take offensive linemen at 10 and 11, then Trent Williams makes a little bit more sense. But you would think he is going to get moved near the draft, whether it's a couple days before, whether it's during the draft, whether it's a couple days after. If it leaks on past that, Washington really starts to lose some leverage. So, you know, that is how I kind of foresee that unfolding. Some team doesn't get their offensive lineman of the future. They go and make a play for Trent Williams at a second round in a touch more level, or you know, a third round in a touch more level. That's kind of what I see coming of that situation.
The Jets become very interesting there, knowing what we talked about last week, how, I mean, a lot of people have them slotted for either a wide receiver or an offensive lineman, but if they're able to get a deal in place, it's pretty reasonable for a proven commodity, even one that didn't play at all last season, and they can get their wide receiver, then it may make some sense for the Jets. Cleveland, like you said, interesting as well, as they can go in a variety of directions with their particular pick. When we look at the New York Giants, this was a team trying to figure out its identity.
Why don't you drum up a trade between the Redskins and the Browns? Browns get their left tackle. Browns get some cap space. Browns get some other draft picks. And then OBJ is reunited in New York.
Hey, I mean, you know what? If people
want
to try,
this feels like
on,
we could have a hot take session here on OBJ going to the Jets. Bang the table.
If some of the guys on our lovely social media feeds want to get involved, whether they're Redskins fans, Jets fans, or Browns fans, I want to throw out some of those ideas. I'm sure we could retweet and circulate them, knowing that there are some decision makers in the National Football League that hang on your every word that comes on this podcast.
There you go.
So when we look at the Giants, speaking of OBJ, they go out this offseason and they add James Bradbury on a 3-year deal, a shade less than $45 million. They tab Blake Martinez from the Green Bay Packers. Offensive line, Cam Fleming. I don't really know what that does for them. They still desperately lack an edge rusher. But I guess the first move I want to start with, Payne, and then you can obviously go into some of the guys that we've already mentioned. Were you surprised that they put a franchise tag on Leonard Williams? Is this just kind of Dave Gettleman not wanting to be wrong after making the deal in the middle of the season?
Yeah, you know, listen, if you're a Giants fan, you better hope that Daniel Jones is good and takes the next step, and somehow Dave Gettleman can bring in some talent through the draft. That's kind of what I'm going to say. In terms of Leonard Williams, you know, it is what it is. Dave Gettleman's on the hot seat. So by tagging Leonard Williams, you don't commit long-term to him, which I think is probably smart. There's only a few interior linemen that you should be breaking the bank for. It's not a premium position. But at the same time, you don't want to lose that type of talent when you're on the hot seat. And the one element of your defense that was actually good last season was your run defense. And, you know, when you look at some of those numbers, the Giants finished seventh in defensive rush efficiency. They only allowed 41% of runs to great successful. Leonard Williams was a substantial reason why they were that good. He is a very, very good interior lineman when it comes to stopping the run. It just hasn't materialized as a guy that can get pressure on the quarterback consistently from that position. And so, again, interior lineman that just stopped the run is not a position that you want to spend major bucks on in free agency. So, I mean, that's really the deal with Leonard Williams. You don't want to get rid of him, but you don't want to pay him long term, and you're on the hot seat. So that's what Dave Gettleman chose to do, tag him.
As far as some of the other Giants' needs and or moves they made, do you think they're headed in the right direction, or do you still feel that this is a franchise that doesn't quite know where they want to be and what they want to do to become contenders within the division again?
Yeah, they're not quite the New York Knicks yet, but another like offseason or two with Dave Gettleman, and you're certainly trending right there. Listen, to me, the offseason hasn't been great, and I know a lot of Giants fans are very happy, and there's a lot of folks that have graded out some of their offseason acquisitions as being a huge help to the future. Listen, we like James Bradberry a decent amount, and statistically, I think his numbers look good in Carolina's scheme, and he was certainly playing in a division and going up against the likes of like Julio Jones and Michael Thomas and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, so and much more talented quarterbacks. So I think when you move him to this division with less talented QB and wide receiver now, he could even take another step, and he is in his prime. You look at this deal, it's really 2 years. And it shouldn't be a shock that they went out and spent on James Bradberry. Right? This is like the worst unkept secret ever. Dave Gettleman drafted him in the second round when he was the Carolina GM. So this isn't a shocking thing. I think James Bradberry is a fine player, but the contract insinuates that he's one of the best three corners in football, and I'm not on board with that. Blake Martinez, I think it's probably a solid signing, and it's a position of need if he can return to like his 2018 form. His 2019 production wasn't good at all. One of his worst seasons as a pro. Horrific against the run. Had trouble shedding some blocks. Got bullied a lot at the point of attack. Carl Banks seems to like him, and maybe it's as a blitzer to help get some of that pressure you alluded to from the linebacking position. He was decent in coverage as well. So, you know, if you bring in, you know, bring back a Leonard Williams who helps stop and fortify the run, and your issues are more in terms of getting pressure and coverage, Blake Martinez might help you in those two categories.
An interesting team. We'll see what the Giants can do. Offensive line remains a major mystery.
Oh, it's huge. Clearly, and to your point of pass rusher. I mean, listen, the Giants went into this offseason with a ton of cap space. I'm not sure they addressed their two biggest needs, which were both lines of scrimmage. You know, and just you see the team. This is what's so frustrating, right? It's 2020. This is a pass-first league, and you see where certain teams are spending their money and where other teams who are doing this smartly are spending their money, and they're two drastically different things. This is a pass-first league. You have to do two things: pressure and sack the quarterback, and prevent your quarterback from being pressured and getting sacked. And right now, the Giants haven't done much to improve their offensive line after Daniel Jones was pressured more than any other quarterback in the league. And defensively, like, they were averaging pressure rate last year. And they're below average in sack rate. So they haven't done really anything to address those two areas. And they spent a lot of money.
You'd have to think the Giants hopefully don't screw things up in the draft, because drafting at number four, assuming that they don't make a move, they'll have a chance for either an offensive lineman or to get a defensive difference maker in the form of maybe like an Isaiah Simmons. So
that'd be great if Simmons, falls there. And we have seen that Dave Gettleman isn't a guy that trades back. He's been in seven drafts and hasn't traded back once yet. So he's probably locked in there at four. But you would think with some of the areas of concern, you could maybe move back a pick or two and get more draft assets and fix a couple holes. But,
you would hope or think, but history doesn't always become a predictive measure of future success. And as you talked about, Dave Gettleman has done one thing in the draft and one thing only. So we'll see if a tiger can change its stripes and allow the Giants to go out there and fill a myriad of holes that they still have to deal with on both sides of the ball. When we talk about the secondary and James Bradbury, I mean, your feelings were well known there for the Giants. I know you were much more bullish on this particular move. We talked a little bit about the impact and hole that Darius Slay's trade was going to leave for the Detroit Lions. He, of course, gets shipped to Philadelphia for a third and fifth round pick. Philadelphia signs him to a three-year deal. And then when you look at the rest of the Eagles' secondary, did this do enough to help a secondary that was routinely a liability? They do bring in Nickell Roby-Coleman as well, and a lot more expected of Rodney McLeod, Avante Maddox, Jalen Mills, and Will Parks to round out their defensive backfield.
I love the Roby-Coleman signing. Let's just put that there. Listen, there are two things that are very true. The Eagles' secondary is not nearly as bad as the national media portrays them, but it is the weakest part of the Eagles' defense, okay? And, you know, when you throw on the film and you're an opposing team that's like devising a game plan here, you're going to attack the secondary. But if you just look across the board, like Philly finished 16th in defensive pass efficiency, 10th in passing success rate allowed, 17th in explosive pass rate allowed. They obviously want to improve that unit, but it's not like this abomination by any stretch. The organization's very savvy. They're very analytically driven. They comprehend that to compete for Super Bowls, like the secondary needed fixing. And that those metrics that I kind of rattled off there probably aren't as good as they are on their surface because they face the bottom 10 schedule of pass offenses. So they wanted to upgrade that position. And Roby-Coleman certainly helps in the slot. And again, it's an analytically driven team. And they comprehend that the slot position is a premium position in 2020. And it's vastly undervalued in the market right now. So, smart signing there. Darius Slay is someone that we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast and his importance. That was a good deal for all parties. That's good business, right? Slay is happy. The Eagles are happy. The Lions are happy. If Darius Slay, who's, I think, got a season or two or maybe three left of prime football, if he can get back to his 2016-2017 form when he actually liked playing football, this is a great signing. He hated his coach. He hated the organization. He wanted out and got paid and kind of dicked around a little bit. But I think, you know, the hope is for the Eagles and their secondary is they're hoping for health, right? LeBlanc played four games. When he was there last year, allowed 0.8 yards per route run. Avante Maddox played 12 games, allowed 1.2 yards per route run. Sidney Jones, now 2 years removed from a torn Achilles, put his best season together, but he only played 10 games. Jalen Mills played 9 games. All indications are that he's going to be the guy to move to safety to fill Malcolm Jenkins' shoes there. There is this internal shift to be positionless in the secondary between Mills and Maddox and Parks and Roby-Coleman. What they want from those guys is to move them around down to down, right? One time the guy's going to be playing slot. One time the guy's going to be playing safety. The overall point here is I think if you can get Slay to return to form and the team isn't infected with the injury bug, the secondary is going to improve here.
When you look at the signing of Javon Hargrave to pair alongside Fletcher Cox on the defensive line, obviously helps any secondary when you have two guys that can get after the passer. And one of the things the Eagles have done as well as anybody over the last couple of years is apply a pressure rate. Did they pay too big a premium to bring him over from Pittsburgh?
I don't think so. I mean, the guy's an absolute monster. He's coming off back-to-back elite seasons. he can not only stuff the run, but he can pressure the quarterback from the inside, and he just turned 27. So again, when you look at some of these deals, what is the true money? How long is it? Where are they at in their career? So when you're signing a guy, when really it looks like a two-year deal and he's 27 and you're fighting for a championship, I don't mind that signing. And then when you compare him with Fletcher Cox, which guy are you double-teaming? And the answer is probably neither. And what becomes interesting is what happens with Malik Jackson, who you signed last offseason to a big deal to pair with Cox, right? He suffered an injury. We really didn't get to see him play. The Eagles probably have the best interior line in the league right now with three guys in Hargrave, Cox, and Jackson. And while we talk about that potentially not being a premium position, each of those guys has an ability to get after the quarterback. And when you're rotating them, and they're all going to be guys that are going to be coming in and out, they're probably not going to be as fatigued. That's going to be a tough group to deal with. So I like the Hargraves move. And again, he's a guy that isn't just a run stopper, but can get pressure from the inside. That's the whole thing about the interior line and why some of these guys sign for so much. It's not a premium position until that guy can get pressure from the inside. And pressure on the inside is the quickest point to the quarterback. And quarterbacks hate pressure on the inside. So if you can get a guy who can pressure from the inside, all of a sudden he becomes a premier player. I just don't want to be overpaying for run stuffers in 2020. That's kind of the point to the interior lineman discussion.
If it's a premium defensive line and a position of strength for the Philadelphia Eagles, one of the biggest question marks remain the weapons that they have available offensively. We saw Miles Sanders come into his own. We know he can be a game breaker out of the backfield, but receiver for extended periods of time was essentially a black hole for Carson Wentz. Philadelphia, first team in NFL history with Carson Wentz. To have a quarterback throw for more than 4,000 yards without a single wideout contributing more than 500 yards. Nelson Agholor gone, Alshon Jeffrey most likely gone, all the speculation that Philadelphia will try and address the receiver position through the draft. Do you feel they did enough offensively, or knowing the trust you have in the Eagles organization, this was all part of a calculated plan that, hey, this is one of the deepest receiver classes out there. We can go out there and address that hole through draft capital more so than anything else.
It's a very, very deep position. You do have DeSean Jackson returning. Still some question marks with Alshon Jeffrey. If you can get some of the guys that had to step up and be key cogs last year that now take a lesser role, that could be beneficial as well, right? All of a sudden, Greg Ward isn't your one, but he's your three. He probably becomes a little bit more of a contributor there when he's not asked to do so much. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, someone they still very much like, specifically in the red zone, right? All of a sudden, if he goes from being your number one outside to being a situational guy in the red zone, he might be able to excel in that situation. To your point, though, the draft is loaded with receiver, but it's a tricky season. We already know receiver is one of the toughest positions to acclimate yourself in immediately. That first offseason, what we've seen, draft a wide receiver, it's very, very rarely he's a massive contributor year one, and that's why I like Terry McLaurin so much. Because it's such a tough position to get going, and now how we're looking, right, this offseason, where there really isn't going to be an offseason program, I think it's probably going to be even more difficult to implement first-year wide receivers into your system. But they're going to make some moves through the draft. Maybe they add a veteran guy in free agency or through a trade. But they are certainly looking to get some help at that position, without doubt.
Should be an interesting team, one that I know we were both exceptionally high on coming into last season. Injury bug never really gave them a chance to operate at full capacity. And then with the injury to Carson Wentz against the Seahawks, saw their season come to a premature end. The team that they were able to eclipse for the division title was, of course, the Dallas Cowboys. And when you look at the Cowboys, we know their focus this offseason and last has been on fortifying their offense. They re-sign Amari Cooper. They bring in Blake Jarwin, a deal that was probably under league average, so I think a good signing in that regard. But of course, this is a team that's still trying to figure out a long-term solution contractually with Dak Prescott. We know Ezekiel Elliott under contract, but a big loss in the offensive line, Travis Frederick retiring for a group that, hey, let's be honest, hadn't truly been elite over the last couple seasons, like the unit that we lauded years ago. When you look at the Cowboys offensively, we can get to their defensive side, because I think that's a little bit more fascinating. Do you think think this team did enough to maintain the level that we grew accustomed to last season, at least from a season-long statistical performance. We know they didn't exactly play their absolute best when they stepped up in class.
Travis Frederick is a tough loss. I think he is a guy that we've dedicated extensive time to on this podcast previous years. You lose your center, it's tough. In terms of like the bigger wow moves, Amari Cooper, you know, it is what it is. When you make an aggressive move, many times it's going to require a second aggressive move, you know, down the line. When Dallas gave up a first-round pick to acquire him like 18 months or so ago, or however long ago it was, they knew it meant he's going to have to sign for big money. So, you know, you look at him, four-time Pro Bowler. He's only 25. He has shown a willingness to play through injury. I think a lot of people see the headline grabbing $100 million and they panic, but reality is, you know, if the Cowboys want it to be, it can be a two-year $40 million deal. So if Cooper suddenly isn't performing or suffers an injury or whatever, come 2022, he's got $6 million as a dead cap number. You can move on from him at that point if you don't think he's worth the $22 million, which is the number you'll pay him if he's on your roster in 2022. Blake Jarwin.
Hey, I mean...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No. I was going to say it's interesting because we saw Murray at his absolute best last season, and we know how he was able to open up the Cowboys offense, dealt with a bunch of injuries down the stretch. And you wonder if him and Michael Gallup as a 1A, and we won't call Gallup a 1B, at least I don't think yet. He does have that potential. I think it'll be interesting to see those guys out there performing. But I didn't want to step on your toes in regards to your thoughts on Blake Jarwin.
No, I think that's the other thing. There, you know, when you have a young guy who's produced as well as he has early on, you're going to be looking for Gallup to ascend and take that next step. And you have another young guy who you mentioned in Blake Jarwin. I think he's a guy that we were pounding the table for last year to get into the lineup over Jason Witten. Only played 39% of the snaps last year. It seems like the Cowboys have finally listened. It's certainly a steep price to pay. But again, you look at that contract, it's really 2 years for $10.5 million. It's not four for 22. And, you know, you look at a young guy like Jarwin, he's 25. He's entering the prime of his career. He's shown some flexibility, too, where he can line up in the slot as a receiver as well. This is more, to me, about projecting the player he's going to be based on, you know, evaluating a guy that's in your face every day than it is paying a guy who is a proven commodity that you're paying off of, like, previous production. The hope for the Cowboys is that, like, Jarwin is kind of able to, you know, extrapolate his short sample size production over this increased role. And I think when you look at some of his numbers, whether it's, you know, yards per target or yards per pass route or catch rate, he was really in that 6 to 12 range of all tight ends. He's a guy on a really, really good day that can run 4.6, so he's a little bit of a matchup problem in that regard as well. But again, this comes down to Jarwin basically being paid for what they project him to be. And that's part of your scouting department. That's part of your evaluation process. It doesn't just stop at the draft. If you have a good evaluation department, you are self-scouting your current guys to see if you need to get ahead and sign him before he truly hits the open market. That's really how you can save a ton of money. If you can get ahead and say, hey, we've seen what this guy has done in his second year, and we don't want him to get to his fourth year of free agency, you can sign him prior to that on a team-friendly deal. And I think that's what they see in Blake Jarwin. Let's see. Obviously, the past production doesn't insinuate that he should be getting paid the kind of money they are, but God forbid if he put this on film for a couple more years and then hit the open market, they're paying more for him. That's part of your talent and evaluation team, the doing their job properly. Let's see if it comes to fruition.
Like you said, you're paying on potential more so than production, and oftentimes if you can do that properly, it can pay extreme dividends. Defensively, obviously, going to be a much different scenario for the Cowboys. You look at their departures, Byron Jones, who heads off to the Miami Dolphins, Robert Quinn gone to the Chicago Bears. In comes Gerald McCoy and Dontari Poe. You also have two enigmatic pass rushers, I guess, for lack of a better term, and to be politically correct, in the form of Aldon Smith signing a one-year deal and Randy Gregory, who I think's potential becomes tantalizing, and he just hasn't been able to stay on the field. And then Mike McCarthy reunited with one of his former members of the Green Bay Packers defensive backfield in Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. When you look at Dallas defensively, we know Rod Marinelli never got this group to play up to its potential and some of the expectations I think we had coming into last year. Will the changing in personnel and the change in faces for the Cowboys defensively benefit them, or do you think there can be some inevitable growing pains?
Listen, you know, Gerald McCoy, Dontari Bowe, two veteran guys that are both still above average players who signed short-term deals, and you're looking for contribution right away because you're in win-now mode. I just think that they are going to be able to help. I do. And then you look at some of the other guys you mentioned. Aldon Smith has to step up. Randy Gregory has to step up. Two guys that are pure pass rushers. If you can get them in their focused form, they're probably going to surprise some people. That's the big question mark, is the focused form. And you would hope, not only when you're bringing in veteran guys to contribute, like McCoy and Poe, that they can maybe assist with the mental side of the game as well. I think that's what they're hoping for. At the end of the day, the Cowboys severely underachieved defensively. How they finished 2018 and the guys they brought back and the talent they had and the guys they added, you thought that this was going to be a team that was a surefire top five defense. They finished 19th in efficiency against one of the five easiest schedules of offenses. They actually were only middle of the pack in pressure rate for as good as that defensive line was namesake-wise. So to me, you might see, despite being less talented, a defense that actually performs a little better than they were last season. And they are not done, certainly going to add some guys in the draft, certainly have to address the void left by Byron Jones. All indications are they like C.J. Henderson, the corner out of Florida. He's been linked to the Cowboys. So I would expect them to address the secondary in this draft and probably pretty early on. But again, you know, this is always the battle when you try to assess these teams and you try to make numbers on teams, and you try to evaluate some of their signings and the guys they draft, you have to do it relatively speaking. So again, I think namesake-wise, talent-wise, the Cowboys don't have as much defensively as they had a season ago. But in terms of production, it didn't really turn out. So you might actually see a scenario where the defense is better than 19th overall in defensive efficiency.
Hey, there's no doubt names are one thing, but on-field production obviously is what creates wins and losses. So you'll see if a change in leadership on the sidelines can get this group to be where they need to be. It's interesting that you mentioned Henderson out of Florida. I think when you look at where the Cowboys are drafting, I believe right behind the Atlanta Falcons. We'll see if Atlanta likes to go in a similar direction and try and fortify their defensive backfield as far as finding game breakers on that side of the ball, but there is no doubt that the Cowboys secondary remains a major concern, especially when you wonder if they're going to have a couple of pass rushers to pair opposite DeMarcus Lawrence to get after opposing quarterbacks. So interesting division for a variety of reasons. It looks like there's two teams that'll be fighting for divisional supremacy. We'll see if one of those can get themselves in a wild card contention as well, knowing that we're going to have seven teams from both conferences making the postseason, the Giants and Redskins. Well, people know how we felt about the Redskins last year going under their win total. The Giants, we'll see. Both teams appear to be at least a year away, maybe longer, for actually competing. All right, Payne, that's, you know, three quarters of the way through six divisions. Time flies when you're having fun, my friend.
Three quarters. I'm trying to figure out the math there. Carry the seven. Add the two. Yeah, yeah. What is that, six out of eight?
Six. That is indeed six out of eight.
Your math is correct there, sir.
Your ability to reduce fractions, pretty impressive. And of course, we wanted to save all of our listeners from the derogatory comments you make about the West Coast being the soft coast. We decided to save the entire West, both AFC and NFC, for the final two installments of this fine off-season free agency podcast series.
We could do that right now by saying three words. Patty Mahomes rules. And we're done.
That would only
We've now finished that, more than three quarters of the free agency podcast. Does that
point.
Work
we
or no?
We would have finished seven eighths. But no, I think we're going to need to provide a little bit more depth and perspective than you doing a victory lap after Patrick Mahomes wins his first Super Bowl. Of course, the first of the 10 that I think you believe he'll bring to Kansas City and the Hunt family.
I don't know if he's going to win 10. And that'll be part of our, I think, discussion when it comes to the AFC West is trying to figure out how well the Chiefs can draft because their salary cap, ooh, is it yucky.
Well, they'll have to figure things out. You don't continue to, or you don't experience a ton of on-field success by setting yourself up necessarily by not spending. But yeah, there's a lot of guys locked into long-term deals, and we'll see what Kansas City can do picking from that 32 hole. But that's only a little bit of a teaser as we'll get to those two final divisions to get you geared up and ready, of course, for the NFL draft that's right around the corner. Payne, any other final tidbits, words of wisdom, life advice, poker tips? I mean, anything you'd want to share, easy for me to say, with our loyal listener contingent?
No, not at all. Not at all. We're good. We are
all right. Keep
good.
Doing your... Keep doing your homework out there, guys. We will have football sooner rather than later. In the interim, be sure to follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me there at Todd Furman. You can also follow the podcast and, most importantly, should be following at Bet the Board Pod. We encourage you to go over to FoxBet. Check out a lot of the offerings they have, not only for the National Football League and plenty of ways to put your money to work for you, but a little bit of iRacing, a little bit of other things that you can if you're itching for a sweat. From some international soccer leagues as well. For Payne Insider, I am Todd Furman. Hope everyone is staying safe out there, and we will see you at the window sooner rather than later.